Guys, what's up? What's up, what's up? Episode 16 of Where I Belong. I am your host, David Corbo. Thank you so much for tuning in. Coming off a big weekend. Jeez, man. Paid $65 for that fight. UFC 229. It was unbelievable. The card was unbelievable. It was great. But bittersweet. It sucks to have such a beautiful card. And hats off to Khabib Nurmagomedov, the eagle, the crusher. Just a big bummer there. He pretty much implemented his will on Conor, dominated him. For four rounds, you could argue that Conor maybe could have gotten a third round. I would make that argument. But I am a 100% Conor McGregor dick rider. But you can't argue with it, man. He crushed him. He smish. Khabib Nurmagomedov smish. This man, he talks so much shit. I smack. You know, it is. He's a very humble guy. And the violence that ensued after the fight was awesome. People are bummed out about it. Dude, I thought it was great. I thought I was witnessing, you know, some small bit of history there. Thinking that the fight was over, getting ready to wrap things up, and all of a sudden, Khabib's jumping over the fence, and he's teeing off on Dylan Danis, I think his name is. It's Conor's jiu-jitsu coach, and then all of a sudden, you know, Conor takes a shot at somebody that's climbing over the fence, and more people hop in the ring and or in the octagon, and they start taking shots at Conor, and whoo, what a mess, man. But a lot of fun to watch. Derek Lewis defeats Volkov in the last minute of the final round with a massive KO. Takes off his pants to celebrate, and Rogan goes, "Why are you taking off your pants?" Derek Lewis goes, "Because my balls was hot." Because my balls was hot. Tony Ferguson, Anthony Pettis, phenomenal fight. Love to see that rematch. Anthony Pettis broke his hand on Ferguson's face. Tony Ferguson started putting a clinic on towards the end there. And it's a good weekend. Good weekend. anywho, so today I'm getting into it with Nathan Baird of the Instagram page Drawn From The Mind. Nathan's page is pretty dope. He's super prolific when it comes to pumping out artwork. And not only is he prolific, but the artwork is also hilarious. And if I'm not mistaken, he's doing it all with a stencil. What do you call that thing? A Samsung Galaxy 8 or a Samsung S8 with a stylus. There you go, a stylus. He's doing that all there. So, you know, for him to be pumping out as much as he is, he makes a lot of artwork geared toward a lot of big names in the podcast community, which is how I got to find him. He does a lot of work for the Fighter and the Kid podcast, and they actually tend to repost a lot of what he makes because of how hilarious and creative it is, but also how awesome looking it is. Nathan's actually in the UK, so fingers crossed that Skype holds up its end of the deal here. I know you guys know that my internet is shitty, so I do a whole lot of complaining about that. But we'll see, man. It should be good. I don't want to give too much away about what he does. I'd like him to explain it, so let's give him a call. I'm always nervous. I'm always nervous when these things happen. Also, I sure hope this is the correct Nathan Baird. Let's find out. Oh no, call ended. Maybe that wasn't the right Nathan Baird. I hope that's not the case. Let's see. You know what? I'm gonna have to have him... Oh, technical difficulties. See, this is the stuff that gets me nervous. Nathan Baird. Mexico, Nathan Baird. Ooh. You know what? I'm gonna have to... Hopefully that stays open. Let's go to Instagram. Having a hard time finding you. Call me, David Corbo. Send. And I've got to take my phone off airplane. I'm so sorry, guys. The quality of what, and I could easily just pause it and edit it, and but hopefully this works. Just bear with me. Bear with me. Oh. So anyway, yeah, Nathan has seen my message, thank God. Has, you know, he's an artist. He's very prolific. And I'm literally just recycling the shit that I said a moment ago. Let's see what happens. I'm pretty sure he's seen and he's calling me up. I can't wait to tell him that I called the wrong Nathan Baird and that somebody else had to hit the FU button on me. Let's see. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, what kind of things can I say in the meantime about that fight and how awesome it was? If I'm not mistaken, what actually happened was, because if you watch the fight live like I did, there was a lot of, I think Rogan was even saying it, you know, Conor has been hit and he's it's been unprovoked, and he has not returned fire or anything. He's just standing there minding his own business. But if you try Nathan Christie Baird at google.com, okay, we'll do that. Give me one second. Aha! Found him. So sorry, guys. So sorry. Nathan, what's going on, brother?
Yeah, it's working.
Dude, I for sure just called the wrong Nathan Baird, and he was forced to hit the FU button on me.
Nice.
Yeah, man. So what's going on? How you doing over there?
Okay, good. Good.
Listen, I wanted to get straight into it. One of the things cool. I wanted to ask you was, how long have you been... I mean, you know, you would consider yourself an artist for sure, right? How long have you been an artist?
Yeah. Well, I did it when I was younger. I did it through school, did art, took it art as a subject throughout school. And then when I went to uni, and then I just kind of kept it to myself and just used to sketch in books. Never really, took it as a... It was more like a hobby that I just did on my own.
Okay.
Never used to post anything. And then I just would maybe post the odd thing periodically because I'd get it in my head that I want people to see what I'm doing.
Okay.
And then 3 months ago, I did a few just different ones, and then decided I'm going to start posting them on Instagram because it seemed like the best place to put them.
For sure. Instagram is great for that sort of thing. There's a lot of really, you know, I know my listeners are going to roll their eyes at this because I've said this for the past like 3 or 4 podcasts, but I'm really interested in these people that are seemingly a subculture of these really popular artists that I know you and I are both really fond of, namely, you know, the Rogans or the Fighter and the Kid, these kind of characters. And there's this kind of symbiotic relationship between them and a lot of these skilled people on Instagram, like yourself, or I don't know if you're familiar with Photoshop Steve or any of those characters, but there's a...
I'm actually in a group, an Instagram message group with about 17 of them.
Real? That's interesting.
And they all do different things. I think there's maybe... Let me just check. There's maybe like 10 Photoshoppers... And then about 7 artists, okay. 8 artists.
And
which is cool.
And it's people that are, I imagine, also kind of their interests align with yours as far as the people that they're admiring or things of that nature.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the group only started, it was a guy called Chase Leopard. He started the group up for this year's Sober October. So that we all basically like throw our ideas in, show each other's work, support each other. Whenever one puts something up, everyone will go on it and like it and comment and stuff and make sure that it gives, like Instagram gives it the time of day with the algorithm. But it's all, they're all really good and they all do really good stuff. So it's just really just shooting the shit in a message group.
But that's
just, having a laugh, really.
That's an excellent idea, though, as far as, you know, getting together with a group of your peers. I know it's such a strong word, right? Because you just said all you guys are doing is hanging out and shooting the shit. But it is that. It's a group of your peers.
That's what it feels like. But, I mean, yeah, there is a business aspect to it. And we are artists, so we all have the same, like, the same goals.
Yeah.
But also the same problems that we all, like, We meet up on, so we've all had a message off a random person asking for art for free, stuff like that. We'll talk about like similarities between that. So we all have like similar things going on. So it's cool. It's a good place to throw ideas about and know that the other people there doing the same sort of thing as you.
I bet you that happens pretty often. You have to get people asking for free artwork, like, all the time.
Yeah, I'll probably say I get a message every couple of days. and I'm not even that big. I can just imagine what some of the other guys in the group have got, like, 20,000 followers. So
yeah.
I can just imagine the amount of DMs that they get.
Yeah, I'm actually talking to Photoshop Steve. He agreed to do the show. I'm just trying to settle on a date for it. Hopefully that doesn't fall through. But, you know, it's...
That'd be cool.
Doing the podcast is interesting because I think what you've managed to do, you know, where you guys have this group and, you know, you get to interact with each other and bounce ideas off each other is you've managed to find genuine interaction from a group of your peers, and that's something that Instagram, I mean social media in general, is the amount of genuine interactions is far and few
like
in between.
Finding a needle in a haystack sometimes.
Yeah, and
really is.
A lot of it is what you know what I love, those posts where you get it and it just goes great pick, thumbs up, you know, but you know it's been copied and pasted onto every profile that this person could have found, you know. There's always these reach 300K followers, you know, all this crap, which ultimately results in disingenuous followers with no real content.
Yeah, it's just emptiness, really. It's like You want people that are going to... I mean, it's a double-edged sword with Instagram, because if you had 100 bots writing stupid, just plain comments on your post,
yeah,
then you're still going to get into it, you're still going to get more interaction. So for some people, I see some people, they'll have loads of comments like that underneath the pictures,
yeah,
and they'll have maybe 100,000 followers, but they're only getting like 10 likes on each picture.
Yeah. So
it's really hard to know who's genuine on Instagram and who's not.
Yeah, I had someone reach out to me, you know, through email just yesterday or the day before, and it was interesting because they said something like, "I don't have a lot of followers. I just started up the page, and I've decided that to me the main key is, you know, I try to write up a game plan for each day. My game plan is, you know, it usually goes something like, have at least one original post a day, but also repost one or two things that I genuinely find interesting or funny or that I think I want my followers to see, and then go out of my way to have a genuine interaction with somebody who I think is a reasonable person to have an interaction with. And a lot of the times that is somebody who also has a podcast, so I'll have to download their podcast and listen to their podcast and then try to give feedback.
Yeah, to have something. Yeah.
Yeah, because I, you know, even that kind of feels a little weird to me, because I try to be as genuine of a person as possible, and I realize, like, even listening to someone's show out of the desire to be able to have a conversation with them feels a little disingenuous itself, but I think it's still better than what's going on a majority of people's pages and things of that nature. But so this person reached out to me,
and you don't know who the people are as well. So I mean, you kind of need to.
Listen, oh yeah,
if they've got a podcast, listen to a podcast or whatever.
Yeah, which is not really. Luckily, my job is such that I can do that. I can put the headphones in and, you know, so for an 8-hour shift each day, I'm kind of working two jobs simultaneously, where to me, it's a job. You know, if I want to communicate to the best of my abilities, then I need to have a grasp of what it is that this person is into. But this email that I got basically said, you know, the idea that I have a very small amount of followers right now, 240 something, but my interaction is like, you know, out of those 200 and something, 50 of those people are interacting like with likes or whatever views on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And they thought that was significant. And I'm sitting over here going, well, I've only got 240, but I guess it speaks to what you said, where a person could have 1,000, 2,000 followers, but only have 10 likes, and something obviously is being lost in translation. So,
I've seen accounts that are just blatantly, they've clearly either paid for the followers, or maybe someone that follows them that likes them has paid for the followers, because I've known that to happen as well, where a follower will pay for bots to follow your account.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
So then you get stuck with a lot of bots that you don't really want, depending on obviously which way you want it. For me, I want everyone to be genuine that I'm interacting with, just because you'll get more of a conversation out of them, and it'll add to the art. That people throw up ideas, they talk about it more. It feels like more of a product then, rather than just a post that I'm posting.
Yeah,
just wanting people to put thumbs up on.
Just today, I had some time, so I listened to a podcast of somebody who's been very kind to me and has bothered to listen to my work and given me feedback. I did the same for him, and I commented on his post about it with a little saying that he dropped that you would have only gotten if you had listened to the podcast. And he was so happy about it. He was so genuinely happy about it. And it was nice. I think that's why things like podcasts are so successful right now, is because actual genuine interaction with all its subtle nuances, and that's kind of gone right now. And I think it's filling a void that we didn't realize we had when it comes to listening to somebody else speak long form.
I think most people feel like they're having a phone call with that person, but they're just not talking.
Yeah, yeah, that's how I feel, which is almost sad, right? Isn't it a little weird? You're like, oh, these people are. I feel like you're my best friend.
I don't know. It depends on the way you look at it, but I mean, it's directly going into your head from their voice.
Yeah,
and you feel so close. Depending on how you listen to it, especially when you've got headphones in.
Oh yeah,
it's just it must be some sort of response within you that. It feels closer to you, and you feel like you know the person more. And obviously, it depends on how many times the podcast comes out in a week. But someone like your Joe Rogans, where you could have three podcasts that might be about 10 hours of content in that week.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're consuming that every week. I mean, you're gonna feel like you know the person.
Yeah, it is weird. I think Rogan even talks about that. It's like I know that man pretty well at this point. I've been listening. I'm 28 now. I've been listening since I was 21, I think. And at this point, it's kind of like, oh, geez, I know the guy. The guy doesn't know me at all. It's bizarre to know someone so well who does not know you. That's a strange thing that we've come into, you know, existence with. But I wanted to ask you. I was kind of going through your page. I'd like to, you know, find as much as I can, and your first post on that on Drawn from the Mind was Scab back in 2017 in April, and it looked like you had actually drawn that on a pad.
Yeah, about I think I'm not 100% sure, but I think maybe the first 20 or maybe first 15 of my posts were stuff like that. Just stuff that I'd drawn out, and then I'd either photographed or scanned in, and then just messed about with them. It's just something that I used to do all the time. I used to do it in school and stuff, even using paint. I'd like scan something into paint, and then color over it and stuff like that. But I just never took it anywhere. And then once I realized I could do it on my phone, It was the natural progression from that.
Oh yeah, because really. You're using with the S8 and a stylus to do all this.
Yeah, I'm just looking now. I think the first 1, 2, 3, the first 20, no, maybe up till the first Fighter in the Kid one I did with my finger.
Really?
Yeah.
You pulled those off with your finger.
I didn't know. I didn't have a stylist, so
that's
I was like,
phenomenal.
I'll just use my finger.
Well, I noticed that, because your first post was in 2017, April, and it was, you know, it was kind of sporadic from that point on, but it was May of this year where you really started to crunch down and become, you know, I regard you as kind of pretty prolific with your work, and that's May was kind of the
I've been told that quite a few times.
Which I want to get into that, but it's very impressive to me. But back in May was this kind of upswing, and things became very consistent. What was going on back then?
It was literally just me thinking I put this art up every once in a while, and on my personal account. I had put a few things up and I'd noticed I could draw on my phone. And I just realised, I was like, it's something that I enjoy doing. If I can do a few a day and draw things that I consume and that I enjoy, then if it goes anywhere, then I'll be doing something that I love, and that's everyone's aim. including mine. So
yeah.
I just thought I'll see what I can do. I'll just see what my limits are, and then go from there and see. Like, I wasn't expecting anything. I wasn't expecting any likes. I wasn't expecting any shares. Nothing like that. I was just wanting to put my art up and maybe have some of my friends and stuff like it. I don't know. But obviously, it's evolved from there into something a little bit different.
Well, yeah. At some point. I mean, geez, we're talking June. So May to June. In June, you posted a small celebratory photo of you reaching 250 followers.
Uh-huh.
That was only in June.
Yeah, but, like, to me, it felt, like, really quick. But I suppose to some people it wouldn't be. But to where I am now, likes wise and stuff, being able to reach that amount of people, I'm really happy with what I've done in 3 months. But at the same time, the workhorse in you sort of goes, yeah, but you can do better than that.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's how you should be thinking. You know, it's something I want to touch on later, but I sense in you something that I got from Rick of Nature is Metal, which was my last podcast. And
yes.
I think even yes, something
I listened to that.
That I love. Rick is a fantastic guy, and I love that conversation. He was but where he is right now is this trying to capture kind of lightning in a bottle.
Yes.
And I think that you're in a very similar place. Even Rob of McDojo Life, he's also, he's recognized there's something going on here. I have to figure out how to maximize this opportunity. What would you say?
You sort of get a feeling that you need to capitalize on it, or else you're missing out on something.
Absolutely. But I mean, in this kind of wild, wild west internet age, it's the reason that I think the reason that everybody's so gung-ho, so ready to capitalize, is because we've all seen bizarre things happen to people where all of the sudden the ship takes off and you're just trying to figure out how to steer the damn thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You want everyone, every single person I've spoke to on the internet, it doesn't matter what they're doing, they all want the name in the bucket. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if it gets pulled out and then suddenly they've got thousands and thousands and thousands of followers and they've got something that they can make a career out of, then that's great. But if they don't, a lot of people just, they'll move on to the next thing as quick as. The only people that seem to carry on are the people that have that sort of personality where it's like, I want to see how far I can take this.
Yeah.
Rather than thinking, I want to see how far the internet likes it, which is what a lot of people do. They let their results, the results of what they do, in that short space of time, denote whether they carry on doing it. Whereas I know that I enjoy doing it and I know that I'm okay at it. So therefore I'll just keep going and keep getting better because I enjoy it.
Yeah. I think what that right there is probably a huge key to finding any success at all, which is, you have to be doing something that you enjoy, because you're not sitting here. You don't give me the impression that you're putting your ear to the ground and trying to get a sense of what people want you to make a picture of.
See,
you're making pictures of the things that you genuinely enjoy. And that's shining through to people that, you know, one, obviously are in that market, but I don't think that you could to do a lot of the pictures that you've done, you have to listen to the content and you have to make pictures based off of a 2 hour, 3 hour podcast that you listen to. Imagine having to dedicate that time and listening to something that you don't want to even be a part of because somebody else wants
to
see it.
I've got friends that do similar, that use the same medium and stuff like that. And people that I've even spoke to on the internet and stuff that I know that they'll go, oh, I don't really like doing this, or I've got this work to do and I'm not interested in it, but I'm doing it because it's making me money or whatever. And that's not the way that I want to be. I know at some stage it's gonna happen for some things. You just gotta try and minimize that. And I mean, like you said before, when you listen to podcasts at work, that's the way I see it. Except for I'm doing the art whilst I'm listening to the podcast.
Okay. So, I mean, it's kind of a pleasant byproduct. I mean, you enjoy listening to these shows anyway. And I would imagine that you get a kick out of the finished product. I mean, that Theo Von milking the almond, I wanted to cry. That was so funny. That was so I've got a couple of, I have a couple of personal favorites I wanted to.
Okay, cool, yeah.
The balut eggs.
Yeah.
The Brian, the Brendan, and the chin. Oh, my God. I don't know what it is about that. I was crying when I saw those. Those are so funny, and they're so well. I like.
I really want to make them into t-shirts, but I'm not at that stage yet. So, but I think they will be.
Well, that's
eventually
something that I wanted to get to is the way that you draw, and the style of it. I think would come across very well on shirts and other things like that. Very well. Even patches. I know it might sound a little weird to you, but there's a lot of these companies that.
I've seen patches before made and stuff. And I mean, I ride a motorbike myself and I've got a few on my jacket.
Yeah.
So I know that there is a market out there for stuff like that. I've had stickers made. I have had t-shirts made before, but just I made the design and then I sent it out to someone who wanted to make a t-shirt out of it.
I so believe I saw those. Was that Brian Callan on the T-Fat K shirts?
Yes, it was the GOAT ones, which I've put up on Teespring myself, so I've got a link in my bio for
Teespring. I saw that. Yeah, I saw that.
But again, that's not where I want to be. That's not what I want to be doing necessarily with those companies. I want to find a way to do it myself because I'm really not happy with the quality. Like, the type of art I do, if you get it printed out and it's not good quality, it really does look bad. At least to me, it does. And if I'm not happy with it, then I'm not going to do it. So I'm not at that stage yet where I can sort of start doing t-shirts and stuff. But I've had so many people asking like it's really hard. I'm like stuck in between.
What about the stickers? I feel like your art would come across well on stickers.
Yeah, the stickers came out really well. I just haven't really sorted like a store to be able to do it and to sell them and send them off and stuff. That's something that I am looking into. It's just I kind of want to do it all as one thing, so I'll have t-shirts, I'll have stickers, I'll have other things, because I kind of like myself, if I buy someone's t-shirt or art, it'll come with some stickers or I'll get something free in it. And it makes you feel like they've put that in there for you specifically. And it feels nicer as a product. So I kind of want to do that myself. But obviously it's just logistically getting there, trying to get there.
Yeah, well, it's great that you're already thinking that way instead of just what's the quick money grab. You know what I mean? That would be a lot of people's, see these $5 dad hats on Instagram?
That was one thing that I wanted to speak about, actually. When you start off doing stuff like this, I wasn't doing any art for any money. I was just drawing things and then putting them on Instagram and people were liking them and then that was it. And then I would get the odd person asking, oh, how much is it for you to do a picture for me? But then how do I decide how much my pictures are worth?
That's hard, right? That's hard.
You know?
Yeah.
And I could have said, one of the first people to ask, well, not one of the first people, but one of the ones that I did that I actually ended up posting on my Instagram, I felt like mid-conversation with the person that I could have said $100 and they would have said fine. I could have said $200, they would have said fine. Like it wouldn't, there was a large margin that I could have put the number in. But I just stick to a flat rate and it's not expensive compared to other artists. And it's literally because I don't want to feel like I am money grabbing, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, well, it's...
I don't want to ever feel like that.
It's hard to put a price on something that you feel like you would do for free. You know, outside of selling to someone, you would do this anyway because you enjoy it.
Yeah.
So it's, I can imagine that it's very hard to put a price on
that. It just becomes a time thing. It's like, if I'm doing podcast art already throughout the day, and someone wants me to take like 6 hours of my time doing a specific image for them, then I've got to kind of charge them for that. But the image itself, I would probably be drawing something that day anyways.
Yeah. How long does it take you to pull off one of these?
It totally depends what it is. I mean, the the, for instance, the Balut ones that we were talking about.
Yeah.
Those took a couple of hours, maybe like 3 or 4 hours to do one image, but then all I did was I just changed a few colours and changed a few aspects. On top of the same image. So really, it didn't take me that, probably about 4 or 5 hours to get the finished.
Well,
but some of them could take me as little as an hour, 2 hours.
Okay.
Just depends what it is. The film ones don't take me that long.
Oh, that's right. You were doing a film spree for a while there.
Yeah, I've got about 52 so far, and I want to get to about 100. But whilst there's so many podcasts going on, it's kind of hard to do the film ones at the same time. And then I'll get commissions off people, and they'll want me to put it up on Instagram. And I'm doing some logos for other podcasts and stuff like that. So it's just obviously trying to time it correctly so that I've got a little bit of time to do the film series as well.
To me, it sounds like you're in the process of getting a foothold on this thing, though. It's interesting to hear you talk about shirts and things like that, but also doing art for other podcasts, doing art for movies, also doing art for logos and things like that. You're clearly testing the waters, and you're not complacent enough to just go, well, you know, I'm going to make some photos. No,
you have to feel like you're moving forward somewhere.
Yeah.
So whether that be even just making one sticker, like at least that's moving forward. And then, but I'm ambitious. So I'll look at more stuff than I always look further ahead than I'm actually going to go.
Yeah.
Just because I think it's better that way rather than, say making a sticker and then people going, we want t-shirts, and then I haven't looked into it, so it's going to take me twice as long. Well, I've already looked into everything, so as soon as someone asks, I'm there to capitalize on it straight away.
What's the saying?
And see where it goes.
It's luck favors the prepared, something of that nature.
Something like that. Yeah.
What made you decide to go 100%? You mentioned that about 3 months ago, you decided to put the pedal to the metal and just start.
Yeah.
What was that? What was going on in your head?
I think basically the way I work is when I feel like I'm stagnating in any sort of way, I will push towards something. So when I was younger, I think it was partying and stuff like that. and then as you get older, obviously you don't party as much, you don't socialise as much. I myself feel more comfortable at home with my fiance and my dog, just chilling. And so then it's like, well, what am I pushing towards? And because of other things going on, I was just like, I'm free to do something, and I need to know what that is. And I used to sing quite a lot, be in bands and stuff. But I knew it wasn't going to be that, because I'd had my brief stint at that, and I enjoyed it, but it wasn't. I don't think it was for me in the end. But there was just one thing that I constantly always used to do, and it was just always like little crazy drawings. And so it's weird because I just decided to start putting them up because I was putting them up on my personal account, and I thought I might as well put them up on another account.
Isn't that interesting? Well, because it feels like once you make a second account, that's when you know it's real, right? It's like,
yeah, it was official.
Yeah, exactly. Now it feels like a job. Like a job that you want to be good at.
I just didn't want it to. I didn't want it to feel cheap. I wanted to, as soon as I started doing it, I wanted to go into it like full steam ahead, so that I would get to the point where I am now, where I'm happy with every piece that I put up. I can see by looking at my first post to the one that I've just put up now that I've definitely gotten better with the medium and being able to express more of what I wanted to do rather than being stuck to a certain style. So if I hadn't have made the second account and I just kept putting them on my personal one, I don't think I would have done it as much and it wouldn't have got this far.
Yeah, I think, you know, at my house here, I have this small, I call it a studio. Well, really, I call it the lab, but it's, to me, it's a psychological trick to call it the lab, because I've carved out this little area in my house where, you know, I've got my setup and my table for guests and everything, and things that I draw from inspirationally, little objects are all around the room. And to me, it's something about having a space, a creative space, is very meaningful, and it helps me to get into the right state of mind. But I also think that applies to having a space, even though it's not a physical space. The second Instagram is a space, and it helps you when you're on there.
It just feels like that.
Yeah, yeah. And when you're on there, it's kind of, I'm here to work. That's why I'm on the
second. I probably have a total different demeanor when I speak to people. I'm definitely more nicer to people on my second Instagram.
Are you really?
100%. Yeah, like, it's just the amount of, I don't want to call them time wasters, because obviously they're messaging for a reason. They have a pot intent when they're messaging. But it's like the amount of silly messages you get, it would be, and I've seen people do this where they'll just go, leave me alone or fuck off or what. They'll just be really, whereas I just can't do that at all.
Okay.
I just end up saying it really nicely.
Yeah.
So just being like, oh, I'm sorry, I can't do that for you, but I hope you have some luck doing this. Even when I had one guy like try and insult me, made a conversation with him, and I just ignored the insult and was just really nice.
Yeah.
Whereas if that my personal account and he'd been messaging me, okay, I would have just told him to fuck off.
That's excellent. Yeah, I see exactly what you're saying. That's. You know, I think part of the reason is probably because ultimately these people are messaging you, regardless of how annoying they are, which I'm sure they are, is because they admire your work. And even though they're shit at communicating and come off as a douchebag, it's still nice to know that they're coming off as a douchebag because they like your work.
Yeah, the reason's still there why they've messaged me.
Exactly.
And it's because they've seen my work and they've liked it. So I kind of feel like I have to give them some back. And it normally comes out as just politeness and manners that I would not normally have if someone was speaking to me in the way I have been spoken to.
Yeah, and a lot of the time when you engage these people, you come to find out they're just nice people. It's just people say weird shit on the internet when there's no real... There's no real consequences.
Well, I see the worst type, because what will happen is I'll get a share and I'll constantly watch that share. So I'll watch it on the other page. So whether, no matter what podcast it would be, I'll watch that share. And some of them obviously have a lot of followers, so they'll get like thousands of comments. And I'll look through every comment and I'll like it, just because I think that might bring them to my page.
Okay.
Because it's not always, just because someone shares your stuff doesn't mean that every person that sees it's going to come to your page. They might just like it on that page, and that's the end of the interaction.
Which is most likely.
I go through the comments and I like every single one of them. And there's maybe out of 1,000, there's maybe 10 bad ones. And the 10 bad ones always get on my nerves, and I always write underneath them something nice, but just negating whatever the point is that they have, like, oh, you haven't drawn this person very well, but that's me putting it politely.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I would write something just, like, funny, but just to sort of correct them in the way that I've drawn it. And then I'll get DMs off them, which will be like, oh, I didn't mean anything by that comment, I just love your art.
Yeah, isn't
And I'll be like, oh, God.
Yeah.
They just want attention, a lot of them.
That, well, that's what it is. I can see why they do it. I understand why they do it, but it's never... I just try not to engage in any kind of negativity like that at all. But, you know, one of the things that I really enjoy about your pictures is, especially when whoever you're drawing is smiling, something about the art style. Their face is so hyper detailed in a weird way. Not hyper detailed, but it's so they always come off as looking insane and hideous, but in a cool way because of the art style. And I can't, I mean, just seeing, like I said, the bullet eggs, or one of my other favorite ones is, you actually did this one recently, which is the Forrest Gump with with Tom and Christina and Brendan and Bert. Oh, my God. Hats off to you. That was such a hilarious idea, and the layers to it. Everybody,
I really wasn't sure about that one.
Oh, I love that. I like when Go on.
I was switching characters about. I didn't know. I knew I was going to do Bert as in running.
Yeah, yeah.
I just didn't know whether I was going to do Tom Segura as Forrest Gump with Christina and Brendan in the wheelchair, or whether I was going to... I didn't know whether I was going to actually put Brendan in it at first, even though Brendan was from that episode. But then once I'd worked it out in my head, I was like, this looks right. Yeah. I'm going to just do this one.
I love that. I love when you go really creative. I like when you take a step out. I mean, to assign each one of them as a character from Forrest Gump, and, oh, man, it was great. I had not even listened to that episode before I saw your art. I saw your art and I was like, shit, I gotta watch that episode now. I gotta know what's going on here. That literally spurred me on to go see that. That one, the even more recent, Mommy Tina with all the comedy babies in her belly.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that was hilarious. She reposted that.
It's so weird, right? Because I get the notification through that comedians and that, they like it, but I don't rely on the share. I've got this mentality now where I just don't rely on anyone sharing any of my stuff. I would like them to, it would be nice, but I don't rely on it. But then just when you get it, it's like such a good feeling.
Oh man.
It's like a bit of validation.
Yeah.
For what you're doing.
For sure. I have no idea why to this day. Christina Pazinski follows my personal account, which I think is an accident. The way I imagine it is one day she was on Instagram and Tom was in the background and she said, "Hey, Tom, the gardener's name was Dave, right?" And he was like, "Yeah." And she was like, "Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is him." And she followed me. And I don't understand I have no idea what's going on. But because of that, I can, like, she'll always respond to me in the comments on my personal page. If I comment on her post, I'll get a whole comment back. And each time I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, she, to this day, yeah. Christina Pazinski thinks I'm somebody who I am not. And I don't give a shit. I love it.
Well, I mean, just keep going with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Try it out.
One of the other ones that I liked was, and I think this is... This literally probably, I think it came from your mind, and you can tell me whether or not, the cunt hand gesture.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
I thought that was really funny, man, because right now that whole white power thing with the okay sign, is that what you were getting at?
I think it was that. It might have been something else, actually. Maybe it was that. They were trying to ban something. I'm sure it was.
Yeah, what's happening now, and I don't know about over there, but I see it a lot in any kind of super progressive media that's happening in the States, is this idea that the OK symbol, meaning taking the tip of your pointer finger and placing it on the tip of your thumb, and then having your remaining three fingers stand up, that gesture somehow has become synonymous with white power because of the way that, very much like you did, where you took the red lettering and you wrote cunt across the...
Yeah.
Oh my God, I thought that was so funny. It was the heart symbol. Anybody who's ever seen that, where you take your fingers and you put them in the shape of a heart. Oh man, it's a very strange thing that white power thing happened, but... That
cunt. I mean, I don't really agree with that being synonymous with that symbol, but 100% every time I do the heart symbol or see someone else do it, I think cunt.
That's hilarious.
You know,
that's great. So I want to kind of pull it back to, like we said, June. You posted a picture of you celebrating 250 followers, and yep. Now you're at 2,535. Now that's 4 months later. That's a very short amount of time. And as somebody who right now is trying
to, it does fluctuate. It does fluctuate.
Oh, because you lose at a time. Yeah, but I mean, it's not fluctuating by 500.
No, never. Maybe like 20 or something.
Exactly.
Like that.
So
because I am so prolific. I don't think it, like, say if I wasn't to post for a couple of days, it probably would go down quite a bit.
Yeah, it's kind of
or maybe it wouldn't, I don't know. But
don't want to find out.
I don't give it the chance to do that.
Yeah, good move. What was the biggest name to repost one of your photos? What was the first real big name?
I think the fighter and the kid always, nearly always reposts my stuff. Theo Vaughn had reposted some of my stuff. That was really good. Brendan had posted some on his personal account. I think the person who's got the most followers that reposted something was Chris D'Elia.
Okay.
But I've only ever had one repost off him, even though I've done quite a lot. But I mean, I don't expect anyone to repost it or share or anything like that. So even that one meant quite a lot, because I was like, because he's very picky about what he shares. And I think he's on 1,200,000 or something like that. So I think that was maybe the biggest that I've had. But the most likes and everything on a post has been the Joe Rogan one I did with the Elon Musk.
Oh, that was great. Is that the one where he's lighting the campfire?
Yeah, and that never got shared. That never got shared off anyone.
And it was still that big.
Just off its own back. Yeah, it just got that big off its own back, which is big. It feels big for me. That's my biggest post, I think. I think I had 2,200 or something likes on it.
Well, that's kind of an achievement, because you did that without the help of anybody reposting it. So it speaks to just how awesome of a picture.
Timing with art, the type of art I do, timing is crucial.
It has to be relevant to the episode.
Yeah.
The most recent.
If something's trending and you get your art in there quick and someone sees it, then it could go into the stratosphere. And there's loads of examples of it. There's a guy who does graffiti at the moment that did one of Joe, I think he did one of Joe Rogan. That's the one that specific piece that he put up suddenly rocketed his account, and he's suddenly got hundreds of thousands of followers now. And then there's people like Ross Baines Art, who he does canvas paintings of people, and he's just did a few for Joe Rogan. And then there's the Dos Brack fella. He does, like, he's got a very specific style of painting that he does, and he does a lot of Conor McGregor stuff. And again, he's got reposted, and he's gone really big, and he's auctioned off his paintings for lots of money and stuff, and they're all doing really well. And I think it was all timing. It was all just getting their art seen at the right time. Although I would say that they're way better artists than me, I think timing has a lot to do with it.
I want to stop you there real quick and just say I don't think that their art is better than yours, especially when it comes to Dos Brack. I like Dos Brack. I was planning on harassing him soon to try to get him on my show. but I think your art is entirely subjective, and uh-huh. I think it really just depends on the person, and your style is so different from.
Right.
Yeah, it's so different from Dos Brack's. What he does is really interesting, and I really enjoy it. But I couldn't compare you to, not at all. I think that Dos Brack's is very cool. Yours genuinely makes me laugh, which I don't necessarily always know that that's his. He makes very cool imagery. I like the style that he does things in. It's very not cartoony. It's almost caricature. Like, and
yeah,
It is very interesting, but I wouldn't say that. I think it's just a matter of consistency and time for you until you get there, which thank God I got you under the radar before you become too big for me. But can you go back in your mind a little bit to like what was going on? What were you thinking when the very first big repost happened? Because I can't imagine, for me, it's a little bit harder for podcasts. Nah, I don't want to say it's hard. It's just a different lane. But if somebody managed to, if some big name who I admired suddenly posted up a thing of my episode and go listen to this, this is a good, I would be floored. Do you remember what it was like having the first person?
The way my stuff works is I have like a post schedule in my head. So it goes by hours. So if it any time between 4 and 8 hours is optimum for me to post another piece of art, no matter what it is. And I just try and keep to that schedule unless I'm sleeping. So what usually happened, and I think it happened with the first one, the first show that I had, is I go to sleep, I'll post something just before I go to sleep, and then when I wake up, suddenly my Instagram's gone mad. And I honestly don't understand how anyone above 10,000 followers works Instagram, because the amount of times the app has shut on me, or I don't get to see all the comments, I don't get to see all the likes that I get just because there's been too many in a set time. The app just doesn't seem to be able to handle it whatsoever. So I think in my first one that happened. So at first I was gobsmacked. I didn't understand. I was like, what? Someone's commented. And it was like, no, they've reposted my ad. So that made me go through their comments and see people, loads of people being like, oh, I really love it, blah, blah, blah. And it gives you validation. You're like, oh, I knew I should have posted that. I knew I should have started drawing. And I knew that people would enjoy it and have some sort of fulfillment out of it as much as I do. And that just sort of validates you. And I think I can only speak for myself, but as you go through ups and downs in your own life, you can have good days or bad days. Everyone's got the line. When you get a share or something like that, or even comment or anything like that, it can make a day that seemed like you were down, it can make it go all the way back up, and it can save that day for you.
Yeah. It's kind of like hope.
There's that aspect to it as well.
Yeah, it's sort of like, all of a sudden there's this weird feeling of like hope and potential. You know what I mean? Where suddenly you feel like, oh, this person reposted or they enjoyed my work. What could come of that? What could be made out of that? You know, that's really what it is, I think.
I mean, that definitely comes, but for me, straight away, it was just being so, like, I cannot believe, like, that I've, like, you feel so close to that person because you know them from the podcast, like we were talking about before, but then you feel extra close when they comment to you, or I've had DMs of some comedians, and I'm just like, oh, my God, they're messaging me. Why are they messaging me? And I'm like, because they are. And then it just sort of clicks in your head, and you've got to try and be cool when you come back. It's not going to happen ever. I'm going to sound like an absolute dipshit every time. But if you just try not to.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's been a lot of people that I've reached out to, and every time you send a message to somebody, for what I do, I'm trying to communicate with people that I find interesting, and it's so hard not to come off sounding like a douche. And not only that, but to also not come off sounding like one of those bullshit robots. You know what I mean? That end up in your DMs where you go, I don't know how to start it ever. Like, hi, my name's Dave. I have a podcast. And immediately you just want to go, fuck off. Like, it's very hard. It's very hard to figure out how to not sound like a douchebag.
You kind of just have to write it and then send it and go, right, like, I've done it now, it's done.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you can't be too much like that, because, like, I've had messages of people that have just been like, draw me this.
Ugh, yeah, jeez.
And then a photo, and then I'll get, like, 7 photos of, like blurry photos as well, because they can't take a photo.
Ugh.
And then I've had people that go, like, I've had people ask me to teach them to draw.
Holy shit.
Like, that's just weird.
That is
Why
weird.
Would you ever message someone and say, can you teach me how to draw?
Yeah, I think...
Over Instagram. I can't. But me being nice, I went on YouTube and found some tutorials and sent them some tutorials and was like, oh, watch some of this. You might be able to learn off that. Just takes practice.
Yeah.
Whereas, again, if that was my personal account, I would have just been like, on your bike.
Well, you know, I think what the issue is very much like yourself and, you know, and even me, we're trying to figure out how to navigate this, how to become successful, how to avoid the day job, and how to do something meaningful. And that journey must really suck if you can't even come off like a normal person. You know what I mean? At least you and I can have a normal conversation where even when I send you a message and ask you to be on the podcast, it's still a gamble. You know what I mean? You're not sure who I am.
Yeah, you never know whether you're going to get a reply when you send someone a message like that. I've DM'd a few people that have shared my stuff, like big accounts or podcasts, to try and, like, maybe, like, shoot my shot and sort of be like, oh, I noticed you've shared this. Do you want to do a T-shirt or anything? Just let me know. And I've just had nothing back.
Yeah.
But with that specifically, I think a lot of that is they get that many DMs that sometimes they just look at the first couple of words, and if they don't want to look at it, they won't look at it. Or they just don't see it at all.
Yeah, well, like you said, with the app crashing and everything, it's probably, number one, overwhelming the amount of shit that they get. But also, number two, it's how do you make those first few words appealing enough that...
Yeah,
you kind of want to send something ridiculous, you know what
That's
I mean?
That's what I did recently.
You want to be...
I had to do that recently with, you know, Theo Vaughn?
Yeah.
So him and Brenda Chow are meant to be doing a podcast called The King and the Sting.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were asking for, like, art and stuff like that. And I'd already done a couple of pieces, so I thought, I'll send it over. So I DM'd him and was like, oh, could I have the email so I could send some art over? And he was like, yeah, appreciate it, thanks. Give me his email. And then I suddenly thought, as I was wording my email with the art, and I was like, he must be getting loads of emails. Like, in the subject, what subject am I going to put? I can't just put art. I've got to put something that'll, like, grab him in and he'll read mine. And then I was like, but surely he won't just be giving you his regular email. He'll be giving you the specific one for the art.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just ended up putting in capital letters, King and Sting Art. And in my head, I was like, he'll see that.
Yeah, yeah, you hope. Or you say something ridiculous like, my nan died and her last words were your name. Yeah. Just say that. you know, and somebody has to respond.
Here is my social security number. Just click here.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, I are you familiar with Wheeler Walker Jr.?
Yes.
Okay, so...
I know what you're going to talk
yeah,
about.
Yeah, yep, so...
You messaged him, didn't you?
Okay, all right, so my big shout out to Rob from McDojo, and I told him this from McDojo Life, that if it wasn't for him, he was shooting a live feed one day on Instagram, and I hopped on, and I had hopped on for several live feeds with him and interacted with him, because a lot of people just say hi, but instead I said, let me ask questions regarding the content, let me, you know, engage him on what he's saying. Because ultimately,
yeah,
I think that's what you want if you're going to go on a live, you know, you want people to engage.
100%.
So,
100%.
He has all these live feeds, and then maybe the fourth or fifth one I hop on, and he recognizes my name, and he says, if you ever want to do a podcast, just let me know. I'm fucking floored. I call my wife, and I go, babe, fucking McDojo Life, just, you know, yada, yada, yada. And she goes, well, what did you say? And I said, nothing. I didn't know what to say. So, you know, she goes, well, message him. Do something. So I, okay. I hang up. I message him. He says yes, just like that. A class act, stand-up guy. Yeah. And you know, it was great to talk to you. But I realized, I said, is it that easy? Is it a matter of asking? And so I'm like...
Oh, 100% it is. But again, it depends. It's the context of the person, isn't it?
Yeah.
What they're like.
Yeah, for sure. So I reached out to a lot of people, you included. And one of them was... Wheeler Walker
thank
Jr.
You, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, thank you very much, dude. Are you kidding me? This is I'm so glad to be doing this. You know what's funny is I don't know when it'll go away. Every single time I do one of these, I get nervous as shit. So before I'm setting up what I called the wrong Nathan Baird, if you listen to this podcast, the first 5-10 minutes are just me going fuck shit fuck. But so yeah. I message
I like that.
Yeah, it's like I said, none of this is edited. I don't believe in, you know, I could up the production quality and the sound quality one day, but okay. It's really just unedited. But so I reach out to Wheeler and I say, you know, what are the, and you've seen this, what are the chances of getting you on my podcast? And he responds in like fucking 5 minutes flat and goes, zero. and I have no animosity towards the dude. It was a Hail Mary of a toss to see whether or not he would do it. And to me, him,
you know,
even
what?
Responding
that's
was part of a
responded. Yeah, exactly.
It was a win. It was part of a win. I'll take it all day, and maybe one day I'll get his ass on anyway. But you know, it's it is weird because, you know, Wheeler doesn't know who the fuck I am. I'm nobody at all. And there's somebody that I reached out to. I don't know if you're familiar with Super Deluxe.
No, I don't think so.
Well, Super Deluxe is basically, they post a lot of memes and a lot of, it's kind of bizarre content, but one of the people
Super
on
Deluxe,
that page.
Yeah. I'm looking at them now.
All right. Okay. So one of the people you'll see, kind of a ambiguous gendered person with like lime green hair. Okay. So she is incredibly prolific with her comedy skits. She's so funny. And apparently there's a lot of debate whether or not she's a girl or a guy. And she's constantly getting these messages that are asking, and she's a girl. That's what she says. I don't know what the situation is, but I also know that she's lesbian. And I think the issue is when I first reached out to her and I said, are you available for a podcast? And she said, sure. Whose? And I said, mine. Now the problem is she goes to my page. There's virtually no followers. There's not a whole lot of content yet. You know, I think I've probably got like 15 hours of me speaking, and you don't know what this person's agenda is. If you're her, you look at me and you just don't know. It's easier to ignore
yeah.
me than it is to engage.
But it's easily cleared up though by a list. Like the first thing that I did as soon as I had any sort of interaction with you was listen to your podcast. Like you've got links up. It's not like it's hard to find
yeah.
out who you are or like what you like because you do your podcast. So it, like after the first 15 minutes of listening to one, I was like, oh, I can listen to this. This is like, I enjoy this.
Thank you.
And so I listened to another one. And then I think I've listened to maybe four or five now.
Oh, wow. Thank you very much.
And it's, I enjoy it. So I was like, of course I'll go on. Of course I would. Like,
yeah.
But to be honest with you, a lot of people will just see your follow account and then just click off. They won't even bother. And I think that's a shame because you miss out on a lot of things.
Well, the way I figure it is, one of the things I wanted to ask you, which I'll get to in a moment, but as long as I do what I've got to do, it'll only be a matter of time until there is some bit of notoriety. At least so when you show up on my page, you don't go, oh, well, who the hell's even listening? Who knows what this guy's about? That my only goal is to get to a point where my page is credible enough that I can still talk to interesting people who will give me, you know, who will give me the time of day. But
well, here's the thing: you're genuine. So there's a lot of people that just have the word podcast at the end of the name that don't have any sort of substance behind them whatsoever.
Yeah,
they just want the followers. They just want the attention.
It's
all fluff.
Yeah, it's kind of almost becoming a flooded market. You know, when I first started this, I have an uncle who I respect dearly, and he said, "What are you offering people that doesn't already exist in a podcast?" And it was a hard question to answer. He was trying to make sure that I wasn't putting myself out there and dumping all my resources into something that was going to fail. And what he didn't understand was how easy it was to still do this and still hold a day job. But
yeah,
it is an interesting question because I don't know what I have to offer anybody that isn't already out there, except for my experience and kind of my own ideas. But what I have noticed is that a lot, like I said, I do listen to a lot of podcasts because it's my field and it's my work, and I have to know what other people are talking about if I care to engage with them. A lot of people, number one, aren't good conversationists, but number two, aren't even being conversationists. They're almost kind of spewing this scripted, they kind of sound like a news anchorman.
They almost make it up as they go along.
Right, which
a lot of them.
My podcast, I have in front of me a notebook with a bunch of questions and a bunch of ideas and everything, but ultimately I want it to feel like a conversation with a friend. That's it. That's all I want. And a lot of these people are kind of pumping out this artificial sounding, I don't know how to explain it. Like, they sound like a scripted news anchor person where they're saying things that I could be funny.
Yeah.
I don't want to purposefully be funny because I don't want to force anything. To me, it should all just be organic. And I think that's so if there's anything that I could say that I offer anybody, which is a very strong phrase, it's just normal. It's just a normal conversation. And maybe you're not having these in your everyday life, but you know, here's a place where you could get them. I just want to talk to interesting people at the end of the day, and that's it.
Yeah. That's the best way. That's the best way. I had some, I was going to be working with a certain podcast. I won't mention the name of the podcast or anything like that, because I don't want to blow his spot up, but who just literally, I'm pretty sure, was just wanted the followers, just wanted the notoriety. The substance that he was talking, the things that he was talking about, the way he was talking about them, you could just tell it was all fake stuff just to try and seem a certain way to then get popular. Mm. And he's according to his website, is very, very popular and very, very good at what he does. And he's done all sorts of like things. But then and one of his main things of his podcast was about like well-being and trying to help people, basically.
Go on.
There's seven million of them where they're basically just spewing quotes out.
Yep.
And saying that they can help you. I'm going to help you on your path to success. And whether that be like diet or fitness, or this one specifically was also about your mind and the way your mind works. But again, checking the guy out and stuff, he had no qualifications in that background,
yep,
apart from what he'd given himself, and it was just that, honestly, if I could show, I might even show you, maybe obviously not put it out there, but the messages that I got off him, I had to show my fiance, like, just to be like, look at this absolute dipshit.
What
planet is he living on? Like, he'd asked for certain things, I sent him specifically what he wanted. He sent me like a 20-page brief.
Oh my god!
In an email for one piece of art. I did loads of art for him for less than what I should have done it for, because he was trying to make out like, well, I can do this for you and I can do that for you. And I just thought, I'm just going to do them, and then if it works out, it works out. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Again, being too nice, maybe.
Mm.
But it was it was just, again, it was like someone that you would, if he messaged anyone, it would say something, something podcast. And then you would click on there and you would have to decide whether that person's genuine or not. Now, listening to that podcast, I was like, eh, not for me. Listening to yours, it comes through. And it's because of that connection, that thin layer that you get through the internet with podcasts, where you feel like you're so close to someone, so you'll be able to sniff the shit from fucking miles away. Do you know what I mean? You would know if someone's not genuine.
Well, when I first started this podcast, the very first episode was very angsty, right? It was full of angst. I was very... Because I was in an...
That's probably the only bad thing that I've ever heard in your podcast.
Yeah.
Not the actual stuff that you were talking about, the repetition of you saying that it was.
Yeah.
Like, apologizing for it. You didn't need to at all. It was like, I didn't even realize it was that angsty until you mentioned it. And then I was like, it is a little bit, but it isn't that much. Like, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the story. But you mentioned it, I was like, oh, it must be worried that it's coming up across that way. Whereas I think your strength is if you don't worry and you just go with it, I think you'll point yourself true, because you've got the right intentions in mind. You've got everything set out, and you know what kind of way you want to approach it.
Yeah, I'm very kind of self-analytical, and I'm not too concerned about what people like, but I'm very overly concerned about what I think of the product that I just put out. And, you know, there was one of them, I believe it was episode 11. It was called Relationship, and I just didn't have a better name for it. But it was me giving relationship advice, and...
Yes, I listened to some of that one. I didn't get to the end of that one.
Please don't listen to the rest of it. It was, to me, giving advice is not what I want to do. And I realized that very quickly, because to give advice...
No, but you were trying out and seeing if it would work and seeing how it went.
Yeah, somebody actually suggested it because we had a conversation about relationships and they liked what I had to say. But to do a podcast alone is, you know, it's a task in its own. But then to give advice about a subject when no one's there to stop you and go, I don't agree with that or anything like that, is it almost suggests that you're an authority on the subject, which I'm not an authority on anything. And that, it does not feel good to put that out there. For sure, I'm going to be steering clear of that in the beginning. But I also recognize that as one of my strengths, which is I have a pretty good compass when it comes to navigating shit that's cringy. And I don't want to do that again, because it certainly felt cringy. Not a big fan of that. But if you had to, and this is even, you know, for me, because, like I said, in June, 250 followers. Here we are, October. I'm not going to embarrass myself with the math on that, but that's at least, what, seven times more than you grew those numbers exponentially in a few months.
Yeah.
If, besides, you know, getting noticed by somebody who is significant, besides having a quality product and being prolific, is there any other advice for somebody who's trying to grow their page, or is it really the being prolific and being quality?
I think, they're the main two things. It's got what you've got to be doing. You've got to believe in it as well. That's a good thing as well. There's plenty of people that I know that can draw really well, but you can tell that they don't enjoy doing it.
Mm.
So they don't post as much because their heart's not in it. So it comes across, I think it comes across in your work and the way you comment and just the way you behave with people and your demeanor, that you're into this, so they can sort of glean that off you, and then they'll put you onto other people. I've had people message me and be like, oh, you did work for this person, they said you were really good, so can you do this for me? Like, that's the best thing ever.
Yeah, yeah. Do you...
So I would just say to someone, especially if someone's starting out, to just concentrate on the art, just concentrate on your content. What do you want to put out? If you're happy with it, it doesn't matter what people say about it, because you'll find your niche, you'll find where it needs to go.
Would you... You kind of mentioned before Instagram's algorithm. And
yes.
Do you have some insight regarding that? Do you think you kind of have a handle on what they're looking for?
No, I don't think anyone does, to be honest with you. But it's more just a thing of, for me, is I know that when you're not posting and when you're not commenting back to people that comment on your posts, that the app almost thinks that you're asleep, or you're not interested. Oh. So it's not even the interaction that you have with other people either. It can be something as simple as pressing on the app on your phone and just looking through Instagram, swiping. Even that, you're looking at it. I've done tests where I haven't been on Instagram at all for a few hours. I haven't touched it, haven't done anything. And I'll get a notification on my phone telling me about a like that I got hours ago that I'd already seen. And that's them trying to get you back onto the app.
I've noticed that as well. Yeah.
So it's all to do with how much you're interacting with the app and with other people. That's going to get you going. That's going to keep you in the app. Like, don't do too much, though, because I think there's, like, diminishing returns with it. So if you're posting every couple of hours, I think the people that follow you are going to unfollow you. Because I'll be, like, even with my posts, which I do curate them, I do think, right, is this one going to fit in with what I like and what I normally put out? But if you're just putting out content constantly, just to put out content, some of them posts statistically aren't going to be great. And it only takes one crappy post for you to lose like 20 followers that just go, I'm not following this person because I don't like that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so it's certainly a number game. The kind of problem with me is that, for example, I've looked up podcast seminars, right? Which I would never go to a podcast seminar, but, or at least not for advice. I would go there to maybe network and communicate with people. But what they say is, one of the first rules that they give you is to find your category and stick to it. And to me, what I want to do is kind of, I don't want to box myself in. I want to talk about whatever I want to talk about, whatever I find interesting. And if tomorrow that is, you know, porcupine enthusiasts, then that's what it's going to be. You know, they almost make it seem like that choosing a category is indicative of success. And
I think they've got it right, but they've got it wrong at the same time. I think it's how you frame it. So if you could be talking about completely different things every week, but if one thing stays the same, and that's the one thing that you enjoy and that the fans enjoy, then you will be successful.
Yeah, I think that's important.
For some people, it could even just be the inflection of your voice. Like, I'm 100% convinced that a lot of people that like Bill Burr just like him because he shouts. And I like him because he shouts. I like that. I'll listen to his podcast, even though I'm not interested in anything. Some of the stuff, like some of the sports stuff, obviously, because I'm from the UK.
Hockey.
I don't know anything about it.
Hockey.
Haven't got a clue.
Yep.
And yet, him shouting about it for 20 minutes... I'll listen to that all day.
Absolutely. I think that has something to do with it. I think it also matters if you have a good voice. I don't What's hilarious is if I listen...
Yours is quite smooth. You've got quite a smooth voice.
Which is hilarious because if I listen to my voice on a phone recording or anything, if I listen back to this podcast, yeah, it makes me want to cry. I can't begin to listen to it.
Honestly, like I said before, I used to sing and stuff, so I've got like videos out there of me doing songs, and I hate it, and it's a psychological thing. I think we've all got it in us to hate our own voices.
Yeah,
you just have to like get past that, get past the kind of the embarrassment of it that you feel, the shame inside,
the shame
into the voice.
I wonder what that is.
The same with every man that goes bald and has to look in the mirror and doesn't like it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You just have to get past it and just, all right, I'm stuck with this now, so.
Yeah. What's the phrase? It's, you're your own worst critic or something like that.
Yes. Yeah,
I understand. I wanted to, and I know I'm keeping you for a while. We're already hitting the hour and a half mark.
Okay. That's fine.
I wanted to tap on, now I'm not going to attempt to pronounce this. But you suffer from a chronic illness that a lot of people recognize as chronic fatigue. Can you, what is it actually called?
So what you've done there is you've done what I did when I first learned about it. So basically, it's got about 17 different, no, it's got about 4 different names.
Okay.
And there is also, there's a difference between chronic fatigue and chronic fatigue syndrome.
Oh, okay.
So chronic fatigue would be characterized as basically extreme tiredness, fatigue in the muscles, in your mind, like brain fog, and that's about it. That's all it encompasses. And then you've got something which is chronic fatigue syndrome, which is just, that's a relatively new term that they use for it, which the old term is just ME. And then you've got similar illnesses that I've been diagnosed with as well, but it's one of those things where you go, well, I can't have everything. Like fibromyalgia.
Yeah.
It's been given a new name and I can't even remember it. It's that ridiculous, but... Oh, I can't remember. It's some IES or something like that. It's just they come up with different definitions because they can't find the root cause of it specifically.
Okay.
They can find markers of inflammation, similarities between people who have the illness, but they can't find out the root cause of it. So therefore, they try and pigeonhole it into other things. So when I was diagnosed, I was 8.
You were 8.
I was 8. So that's like 22 years ago. So it was the time when it was called ME. It was only called ME, but it was also called the yuppie flu, which was like a derogatory term for it.
The yuppie flu?
The yuppie flu, yeah. I don't know where it came from, but it was a derogatory term that was used basically because if I list the symptoms, if not my specific symptoms, but the general symptoms of it, then the average person would go, oh, well, I feel a bit tired sometimes. Sometimes I'm sore. I sometimes have migraines and headaches.
Right.
So then they just tend to go, well, I might have that a little bit in their own heads, whether they say it or not. And then it makes you feel like silly for having some or being diagnosed with something that you can't help that affects you quite a lot.
Yeah, well, as it stands right now, like you mentioned, they hadn't really been able to pin down a cause from it, and that leaves it open to interpretation from people who have no medical degree.
Well, there's a crossover here. There is a crossover here with my work, because... I'll give you a good crossover and then a bad crossover. So a good crossover was Joe Rogan had someone on his podcast, a writer, a well-known writer. I can't remember his name for the life of me. But he has it. And he has a specific diet, specific things, medication that he takes, specific treatments, and a specific routine where he sleeps 4 hours in the evening and 4 hours in the day.
That's not...
And that's how he...
Is that Jordan Peterson? That's how
he manages to function.
Is that Jordan Peterson?
No, it isn't, no.
No, okay.
He has arthritis.
Okay.
I think, I can't remember what his name was, but it was a recent podcast as well that he was on, and he was just explaining how there was times when he was like in bed for like months and not able to do anything. And then now he can do some things and he can go on podcasts, but he has to make sure that he has to stick to certain routines and eat certain things and do certain things. And even then, it's just him managing it.
So what are you experiencing?
That was a positive thing.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go on.
But sorry. And that was a positive thing, seeing that, because it was someone else who has it that has similar symptoms to me and some of the same symptoms to me. And so it was like a positive thing. People out there are getting the information. This might change some people's minds that maybe were like negative towards it. And that was really good. But then on the negative side of it, on two other podcasts, it's been spoke about in a derogative way. And I get that the comedic podcasts, but sometimes it can be really hard to hear something like that said in a jokey way when you're suffering from it and you just wish that they hadn't just went for the cheap joke.
Yeah.
And they maybe looked into it a bit more before they say something.
Yeah.
And I messaged the two people that had done it on separate occasions on different podcasts, and they never messaged back or anything like that. But I felt good that I'd messaged, because if I hadn't, I wouldn't have been able to watch them again.
Yeah, it's...
Because it would have annoyed too much.
It's hard because... Comedy is, it's...
Well, Ricky Gervais does a whole bit on it on one of his specials.
Now, what does he take? Because I know what you are referencing is kind of the, what people would call the hypochondriac angle, right?
Yeah.
Is that, am I pronouncing it right?
Yeah.
Now, before, because I'd like to know what it is that you experience, but I also have to say that there is a Netflix documentary that I don't know if you're familiar
Unrest?
With.
Unrest?
What was it called?
Is it Unrest?
I don't know if it's Unrest. It follows several people.
I'm not happy with it either.
Okay, so...
There's been a lot of controversy around it.
My problem with it is, if there is anybody like yourself who's experiencing something, these people, not all of them, that are on this documentary, but a good majority of them are a very piss-poor representation of what's going on. I think that...
You're hitting the nail on the head there.
Yeah, 100%. I think that there are 100% hypochondriacs out there, and there are also 100% people that are suffering from real chronic illnesses out there. But these... Yeah. There are certain people out there that will latch onto something that is vague and... hard to pin down, hard to diagnose, hard to attribute a certain, you know, whether it's a lifestyle or a sickness that showed up first and then led to this, it's hard to pin that down. There are people out there that are taking advantage of that. Like, if you and I have watched the same documentary, there's a couple of women...
I can't remember what it's called. What I said Unrest, but that's actually a decent documentary to watch made by people who have the illness. I can't remember. It might be called Afflicted.
I think that's it. Afflicted. It pisses me off to no end. When there's a couple of women out there who are like, well, you know, I've got this illness. It's hard to pin down. All I know is it makes me allergic to my husband, but I need his money to survive. So he's got to stay over there while I live in this apartment. That pisses me off. So, but what I will say about that documentary is, you're taking obvious liars and you're using them as a representation of a disease that
even some of them afterwards have come out and said that they've been portrayed in a certain way, and it's even that's hard. But then it's like, well, of course you're going to say that.
Yeah.
So then I'd just rather it not exist at all. But then at the same time, I think you've got to have negative things like that to be able to prove the true things.
Yeah, I think that there needs to be a documentary where it's actual sufferers who want nothing more than to get on with their lives.
There is one, but it's just not on Netflix. It was an independent one done called, I'm pretty sure it was called Unrest. And it was made about a specific woman who had it. She made the documentary, but she also had sufferers in that documentary. And I think it did really well, but it didn't go to Netflix or anything like that. It was more of a, I think it was more of an independent one.
Well, what I want to see is people that are afflicted, actually afflicted, presented in a form that compares them to the liars. Because...
Yes, and then you can see for yourself.
I think that's the move.
Yeah.
Because these people are not a good representation of somebody who's suffering from a chronic illness. It's like, I can't hug. It's always like some young, attractive woman with a fuck ugly husband who clearly has a lot of money, and she's living, you know, a carefree life on his dime, and he's pouring all the money into the research and the potential cure so that he can finally fuck her and they can live there. But she desperately does not want to fuck him, so she makes up things like, I'm allergic to him. I actually heard that on that show, Afflicted, that she was allergic to him. And my wife can attest to it. I was unbelievably furious. I'm never that emotionally caught up in anything, but when people are faking a thing, especially...
It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. But you see it on TV every day, so it's a norm of TV, like, especially of reality TV. There was a one on 600 Pound Life where she was lying about having cancer.
Yeah.
She was saying that her cancer doctor had said that she's got cancer in her back, and the other guy, Dr. No or whatever his name is, he was like, I've spoke to him and you don't have cancer. He says you don't, and she's been saying it for months, trying to use it. And it's just like, oh God, like you're on a TV pro, but then you don't know how much of it is real and how much of it isn't. And for me, when I'm suffering something that's real to me, when I see stuff like that, it's just like, oh God, I wish they would show a different side of it, because this is the populist side. This is what's going to get through to the most people.
Yeah, because it's infuriating, and we live in a culture right now that likes things that provoke anger and you know, sensations like that. It's a reality that there are people out there. It doesn't matter what the illness is, what the belief is, what the anything is. Every group of people has a bunch of assholes in it. It's just what the nature... And then, so if you take a group of people with chronic fatigue or chronic fatigue syndrome, what percentage of those people are actually just assholes? Just like what percentage of people who rock climb?
The main thing for me is... Not only how many assholes, that's exclusive of whether they've got the illness or not. So I've been to support groups with people that have been clearly have issues, and there's been a 10% like cock margin in it where they're just absolute idiots.
Yeah.
So when you get a group that's mixed up with people, you'll have idiots that don't have an illness, or they have something similar, but they're trying to piggyback onto that or whatever. And then you'll have idiots that actually have it. And it's just like, you just wish that that it would be shown in a different way, because it affects policy when it comes to medication, treatment, obviously, I've had this for 22 years. So I've had all the different types of treatments. And I've seen, over here in the UK, we've got the NHS, thank God. for me, because if I didn't, then I would probably be one of those people that would just be stuck not being able to pay for anything.
Yeah.
Because I would have so many medical bills that I just wouldn't be able to pay for anything.
What is it? Go on.
No, sir, but that's all I was saying. Like, that, thank God that I had that to be able to do it, and to be able to get treatment and stuff. Because if it was any other way, I wouldn't have been able to get it. You would be literally stuck. But then when you've got people that are purposefully making themselves stuck,
yeah,
it frustrates you, because it's like, I think there's an expression about only being one mistake away from being homeless or something like that. Like, you're only one, like, missed bill away from going to jail or anything at any one time. Something could happen and suddenly your life gets turned upside down and you're in the gutter.
Well, it must suck.
From my perspective, I'm closer to the gutter than a normal person.
Mm.
Because if I wasn't to be able to get a certain treatment that is helping me, then that puts me in that gutter already.
Yeah, you know? It must suck to see anybody attempt to capitalize off of something that causes you a certain amount of distress and causes you to struggle and is an impediment on your everyday living. And meanwhile, somebody else is out there who doesn't have it and who's using it to live a certain life that they want.
I have a weird personality, and I think that comes out in my art, but I also think that it comes out in my personality when it comes to talking and dealing with this. Like, I'm a very positive person, so even when, for instance, if I was in a lot of pain and I was being sick and say I was having a nosebleed and a migraine at the same time and I wasn't able to hold a glass or a cup or anything like that, I'll still try and eat something and try and do the normal things that you need to do, like get up and wash and stuff like that. Like, sometimes you can't, I'm not able to do that, but I will always try to, whereas a lot of people I know, which I suppose it's just a symptom in itself of the illness, will just go, oh, I'm ill, I'm just staying in bed, I'm never doing anything, I'm not going to try. I don't have that in me to do that. It seems like a normal thing to me, because I see it so much, that it makes me feel like I'm the outlier, because I'm the only one that's trying and pushing for, like you say before, that I'm quite prolific with my art. Well, that's because a lot of the time I'm in bed and the only thing I can do is draw on my phone. So that, I think that has something to do with how prolific I am, maybe.
Well, what do your symptoms look like?
Day to day, it would just be, it's like, the way people would normally describe it is, it's like if you've ever had a really bad virus.
Okay.
So, like, it knocks it out of you. You're like, you've got a bit of a fever. You're being sick all the time. You can't really, like, it's achy to move. It's your body feels heavy. But then it'll ease off, and then it'll come back, and then it'll ease off. And it's not always because of something. It can just be like that one day. But mostly what affects me is if I do something. So I have to have a very set routine with regards to my day. So I have to get up at a certain time. I have to make sure that I'm eating at certain times and stuff like that. And obviously I'm not 100%. I don't do it 100% because nothing's perfect. But I do try and stick to that routine, because that's the only thing that kind of gives you a bit of a semblance and a bit of management within the illness. So most of the time I'm in bed. I can't move. I can maybe move my arms and stuff, but I've got little things, little tips and tricks and stuff that I use to make sure that I can do normal things. So I've got like a telescopic arm that I can put my phone in by my bed.
Okay.
So I don't need to hold my phone up if I need to watch something.
and if I'm doing drawing, that means I don't need to hold the phone whilst I'm drawing. I can just do it with one hand. So, like, I think I'm quite pragmatic with stuff like that. So if there's an issue that I have, I don't go, oh, I've got an issue, I can't do this, and then twine about it. I just fix it.
Right.
Just fix.
You figure out a way around it. Right, that's basically so it.
It's the best way to do to be basically.
What did you do before you decided to put it all into the art?
So I had basically what happened was I'll do a very quick summary. So I had a virus when I was young. Then I got ill. Then throughout school, I was periodically off. And wasn't able to go in, but then I'd be able to go in sometimes and then not others, and managed to at least pass all the things I needed to pass and wanted to pass. I did quite well for what I was projected to do, considering the amount of time that I was ill in and the amount of concentration that I could give to stuff like that. And then I was working in sales for a phone company, and they went bankrupt in maybe 4 or 5 years ago, it was.
Okay.
And because what I'd do is I'd work for the company part-time, and then if I was ill, I'd be off, and they would just meet me every sort of periodically to make sure that I was doing okay, and then I would like phase my return back to work. So I would start doing like 4 hours a week, and then I'd go up to 8 hours a week, and then I'd go up to 16 hours a week. And they were really good with me. I was employed for them for like 8-9 years. And throughout that time, maybe did about 4 or 5 phase returns back to work. Because I always want to work. I always want to be like giving something to, not just to society, but to myself, like doing something, having that achievement, having that self-fulfillment and from doing something. And so then after that, so I was actually off ill when they went bankrupt. So then after that, it was literally like, how do I get a job? Because I was going to have to apply for a job being ill.
Okay, yeah.
I was going to have to say, I'm ill at this time and I can't work, but can I get a job anyways?
Wow, that's hard.
Do you know
what I mean?
You can't really do that.
Oh my God, yeah.
So, and there was nothing that was really flexible enough for me to do with my illness that I would be able to live on. So I literally was just like, well, I can't do anything then. So I had this like 4-year period of just being like, well, I'm not doing anything with my life. I'm just stuck.
Oh, that sounds maddening. Were you going crazy or what?
A little bit, but at the same time, like I said, I would always have my mind on something. So with that, it would be more of a social thing. So when I could get up and get out or see my friends or have them come over, I would really push for that. I would really put my all into it. Like to say that I was a bit of a character, maybe I was a bit of a character and a caricature of myself, a bit more boisterous, a bit more loud.
Okay.
Would probably be an understatement. I'd be a bit wild. I was the wild one for my friends.
All right.
Because most of the time I was in bed or was ill. So the times when I wasn't, I was like, there's no way I'm wasting this opportunity, you know?
But when you, because I imagine, you know, being home that long, that often, you're going through bouts of, you know, something like depression, something like doubt, anxiety, things like that. Would you find yourself going back to art first and foremost in those moments?
Well, I was always doing it. It was something that I would turn to just because I enjoy doing it. So it's like that whole thing of like, if you feel down and you do something that you enjoy, it doesn't matter what it is. As long as you enjoy it, it's a little pick me up. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be phoning your family. It could be drawing some art. It could be doing a sport. It could be exercising. Like, my fiance, she exercises a lot to, like, just to get her frustrations out with work, with she, and she feels like that's her, like, outlet.
Yeah.
And mine was always my art. Mine was always, like, creativity.
Yeah.
Whether it be singing, doing videos, anything, I would always be, like, when Vine came out, that was amazing. I was on Vine for ages, loved it.
And now Vine's dead.
But, yeah, rip. I never threw myself into something as much as I have with this.
Yeah.
And I think that's just because this has always been a thing that I've constantly done. And it just feels like this is what I was meant to do. Why have I never been doing this sooner? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, the reason I asked is because, you know, any time in my life where I go through, it's usually, I'm good at keeping the sadness at bay. When I was younger, I used to be homeless, and when you're homeless, it's like anything in comparison to that is not bad at all. So anything that ever happens, never really, it's not sadness, but there would be massive periodic moments of anxiety associated with, like, what's going on? Why am I not gaining traction? Why am I not finding a successful career? Why am I not having the money that I need to have to, you know, live a proper life? And every time that happened, I went straight back to the drawing board. And every time I started to concoct an idea, it looked like this. Every time it looked like this. And I just never pulled the trigger. Luckily, one day I decided to pull the trigger and...
Good.
Stopped worrying about preparation. Preparation is, that's often the killer of action. It's like, I never have the proper audio equipment. I never have the proper setup. I never have the proper, you know, whatever it is, internet connection, da-da-da-da-da-da. And one day I just decided, you know, screw it. I'm going to open up my iPhone and click on the voice memo app and just go from there. But I asked you because I think that, like yourself, like myself, like a lot of people out there, it's something about the 9-to-5 grind is particularly, for me, is particularly soul crushing. It does something to you if you don't have a creative outlet that is, it's very anxiety provoking. It's very, you know, you start to think down the line and you go, I'm going to be here when I'm 40, 50, 60, 70, you know, until I retire. I'm going to live my life three times over and still be doing some monotonous thing that's...
Yeah,
that's,
what do you have to show for it? You don't even have the happiness of doing the thing.
Yeah.
Of having done the thing.
Yeah, so that's a major cause for anxiety. But it's also, I wanted to ask you about this because... You know, 4 months is a very short amount of time to accomplish what you've accomplished. And I know to you it might not seem like it because you've been doing your art for, you know, ever. As far as starting this page up, going through, you know, a stage where it was inconsistent, leading up to a stage where you finally decided to kind of move in a definitive direction and then suddenly got to 250 and then move in even more of a definitive direction. And now you're sitting at, you know, a multiple of 10 on that. You know, it's, you increase your followers by, and effectively the people that you're reaching by 10 times in 4 months. And
it's weird. You don't think about that. When it's happening, you don't think about it at all.
Because, yeah.
Or rather I didn't. I was always just focused on the next thing. I need to get this. I want to get this out. Ooh, I've thought of this idea. I really want to draw this. I'm going to do it. And it was, I was never thinking, oh, this, like, I wasn't charting my progress in my head.
Yeah.
Thinking, oh, I've done really well. I was always just thinking of how well I could possibly do if I do this next idea that's really, that I really like doing. That's why I try and stay away from doing ideas just because they're ideas, just because someone says that should be done.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that I should draw it.
Yeah, exactly. There's always somebody else for that. You should be doing what you want to do, what you enjoy doing, because that's when the work is at its highest quality, is when you're doing what you enjoy doing. I noticed you've been selling shirt. Well, you have the link for the shirts.
Yes.
And I imagine that you've got some loose ideas about things of that nature, what you want to do next, and ultimately, what's the goal? What does it look like in your mind?
The goal for me is always just to have constantly done this for a period of time, to enjoy doing this for, like, I have these thoughts where I go, oh, in a year, I want to look back and go, I've done art for that whole year, and I've enjoyed every single minute of doing it, and I've enjoyed every single idea, and I've put out everything I wanted to put out, and I haven't compromised myself, and I've really enjoyed it. And I just, in my head, that just comes, I think the byproduct of that will be more success, whether that be more followers, people wanting to buy merch and stuff that I make. I don't want to call it merch because that's a dirty word now, isn't it? But I think they're going to be byproducts that will come from me just working hard at something, because you see a lot of people in day-to-day jobs where they might get promoted every couple of years and they might just move up, but they're not actually pushing themselves when they do the job. They're just going on a Monday and going home on a Friday, yeah, and enjoying the weekend.
Yeah.
And they don't, when they're in the job, they're not pushing themselves 100%. They're just not, because they know that that's their job. And it's in society at the moment, it's like job and play and it's so separate.
Yeah.
The things that you enjoy are separate from your work. Well, no, for me, I've found something that I can do both, and I want to keep it that way because it's a good feeling to have.
Yeah.
Regardless of any other ailments that I've got, it's a good feeling to have for anyone. So the goal would just be to be like 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years down the line and be like, I've been doing this for this long, and I can look at the first post and I can look at the last piece of art that I do or thing that I do and go, oh, look at all that progression. That was really fun when I did that. That was really fun when I was on that podcast. Like, you know, and that's really where I want to go.
Yeah, it's just enough. I mean, to look back and to have genuinely said, look at the progress that I've made and look how much people enjoyed the things that I enjoy doing. That's enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before I wrap this up, I want to ask you, what's going on, man? No Conor McGregor getting stomped by Khabib post yet. I got to see a picture, man.
Right, so the reason why I didn't do that is because it is the thing that people expect me to draw.
Aha! Okay.
But that's why I drew... I was drawing a Tony Ferguson one during the match anyways.
I liked it. Yeah, I liked it very much.
I was drawing that one anyways. But I just thought it's gonna be a dead meme before I get to it, you know?
Yeah.
And even if I do get it out fast, I'm just doing it to get it out fast. So it's not the idea that I want to do. I didn't have any, like, I'd already done a picture of Conor and Khabib as like Marvel characters.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
And Khabib literally did the Spider-Man jump out of the cage.
Isn't that perfect?
I felt like I predicted that, and so I was okay with it. I didn't need to do any more. And I'd done some more of Conor McGregor as the Joker and stuff like that. So I felt like I didn't need to do it, but I did really enjoy every single fight on that card.
Oh, they were phenomenal.
I don't think the one that was boring.
They were phenomenal. I was rooting for McGregor, and as much as I love him, Khabib is undeniable, and I'm certainly not mad at Khabib. It was just a domination.
I'm the opposite to you. I was rooting for Khabib.
Were you?
Because I felt like Conor, he normally talks a load of rubbish to try and rile someone up.
Mm.
But it just felt like this time, the things that he was saying were so opposite to the way Khabib fights.
Yeah, or maybe.
So that he was going to do this to him and he was going to do that to him. Well, have you ever seen Khabib fight? You must have.
He's a monster.
Because that's completely, you're never going to be able to do that.
Yeah.
So it was just like, it felt like extra bullshit on top of the bullshit. And then with him trying to sell the whiskey, that just annoyed me.
Well, maybe.
That just really annoyed me, him trying to sell the whiskey, especially at the press conferences.
I hear what you're saying. I can't help but feel like it's you're genuinely just a Putin-loving, dirty communist son of a bitch.
I have shagged a lot of bears. That's all I can say.
Dude, he put a clinic on him for 4 out of 4 rounds. You know, maybe you could argue Conor showed some promise in the third round, but that was about it.
No, you can't. No. This is what I'll say about that third round. Okay, that was the only round where he looked like he was competing in a match.
Yeah, okay, I can see that.
He didn't win anything. He didn't do enough to win the round at all, but he looked like he had... Oh, look, he's turned up. Like,
yeah, look.
That's what it looked like.
Suddenly he's on his feet and doing something that resembles fighting.
So he's doing something, yeah. He seems to know where he's at and what's going on. Whereas the other ones... even though you could tell in the first round, which I saw there was a Joe Rogan podcast today with his trainers or yesterday.
Yeah.
And they're saying their game plan was to wear Khabib out for the first couple of rounds.
Yeah.
So they were on the back or against the cage or on the floor, or whatever. It didn't matter to them as long as they wore him out for those rounds. And that's why Conor was smiling in between rounds, even though he was getting his ass handed to him.
Yeah.
It was because he was like, you'll see. But then the you'll see just didn't come. He wasn't able to do it.
I'll tell you what, I was very sad. Conor McGregor to me is a giant asshole, but he's also good for the sport. Because if we can get more people to watch the UFC, then these fighters get paid more money. I know that's a big proponent of what Rogan and Brendan Schaub say a lot, and I agree with that. But I also can see, having practiced some martial arts myself, that the respect and the humbleness that martial arts teaches you is something that Conor is clearly not displaying. So it's kind of a catch-22.
Yeah.
But Khabib is absolutely undeniable. And it was a bummer to see that happen. But once I came to terms with what happened, it's exciting to see somebody like Khabib.
I'll be honest, I was just as nervous as probably you were watching it. Being like, oh, what's going on? Is it going to... Oh. And like, you get nervous, like, not at all. All the other fights I wasn't that bothered about, really, apart from in the last round of the Derek Lewis fight.
Oh yeah, that was fantastic.
Obviously, he was losing. He was losing heavily.
Yeah,
and I was just on the edge of my seat, being like, "Get that punch! Get that punch!" Because I really wanted him to.
Yeah,
and I found myself being annoyed at Volkov because he got knocked out 10 seconds before the end. Yeah. Like, how stupid do you have to be? Yeah. In that, he just needed to chill. He just needed to keep him away from him and chill. Yeah. And he would have won that fight. But what he did was he tried to go for a stupid kick and then got knocked the fuck out.
Yeah, yeah. And getting knocked out by Derek Lewis is, you might as well have been hit by a truck.
Oh, yeah. He's gone now. That's him.
And that Tony Ferguson-Anthony Pettis fight was fantastic.
Absolutely loved it.
Oh, my God. I love Anthony Pettis for the wall-running kick to Benson Henderson.
Yeah.
That was fantastic. And I love Tony Ferguson as far as a skill set, as far as a martial artist, but he has this tendency. I don't know if you see it, but I see this just constant cringy thing happening.
He's
with him.
Embarrassing uncle. Oh. He's the embarrassing uncle. Get them fucking shades off.
Holy shit.
Naughty bastard. Like, he's an embarrassing uncle. You don't want to be near him, but at the same time, you're like, if there was a fight, I'd like him on my side.
For sure, but just all of his antics, they're cringy as shit, man. It's really brutal watching him. But as far as my respect for him as a martial artist is enormous. He started to put on a clinic there as well towards the last round before they stopped the fight in between rounds. And he had Anthony Pettis up against the fence. And Anthony wasn't without some answers, though, with that handstand kick that he tried to throw off. I mean,
yes,
he's so creative. He's so creative. It was phenomenal. So, but you know what? I admire that in you, that you are abstaining from doing the thing that is cliche and that everyone expects of you. That's a bold move.
I'm not being funny. Some of my stuff probably to some people would seem that way. Like a lot of the movie stuff, you have to take scenes that people will recognize. But if it's an idea that means something to you, then it's easy to do. But it makes me Tony Ferguson cringe if I was to do an idea that everyone really wanted me to do. And I didn't have any passion for it, you know?
Well, good for you. Good for you that you recognize that and that that you'd recognize that you didn't have any passion to make this thing. Because I'm very sure if you had some fantastic idea that you couldn't shake, you would have done it. But to force...
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, but to force the idea is just... It's not something that's ever a good move, so... So I want to wrap this up. I just want to say that... you know, your art is fantastic. I'm a huge fan. I've been a fan since the first time they reposted something of yours, The Fighter and the Kid, and I got to see it. And I genuinely think your stuff's hilarious. And, you know, like I said, it would make great shirts. I hope you find somebody that's going to do that the right way. Because like you said, if they don't do a good job, it's probably with the thick lines and the heavy detail that it'll look a little funky.
Yeah, I've been speaking to a few people. There's a few Instagrammers that actually do know what they're talking about. Drastic Graphics. I've been speaking to him and he gave me a few links and stuff. So hopefully I'll have something together. But I mean, it's not essential for me to do it. But I just know that I'm missing out on something if I don't, because a lot of people have asked.
Yeah,
well, and I would love to see my work worn by people and people enjoy it in that way as well.
Yeah, I don't see, that's the thing is I don't think it's a cash grab, because I would for sure wear the fuck out of a shirt that you know, that had the bullet egg or you know, the forest guy, any of those shirts. I would for
some
sure
of them
wear.
Some of them I can't put on t-shirts.
Too detailed, too heavily detailed.
Some of them are a little bit, you know,
a little busy.
Not safe for work.
Oh, yeah. What? I don't care. Put those on a shirt anyway. Those are the ones that are going to sell the best. I love them, man. But I feel like, you know, you would do very well if podcasters or YouTube channels knew that they could go to you for art. Have you ever looked into Fiverr, the app?
I haven't. Like, I know what it is. And I know what it's about.
Yeah.
I just feel like some of the stuff, I don't know if you can set a price on there or
you
whether
can.
It has to be a fiver.
No, it's five, 10, 50, all the way to 20. Some people are $300.
Okay. Well, I might look into that a bit more then, because I probably didn't look into it well enough, but I naively thought that it was just set at that, because I just thought, I don't think that's going to, the amount of work that I would put in for a piece.
Yeah. And I can understand that.
That would.
But
that
let me.
Would cost, kind of thing.
I paid the profile picture that you see on my
yes.
Instagram page. I paid $5 for that. I would have gladly paid, you know, 20, 30, whatever it is, for work from you. And the idea that you would have a profile and a page to direct people to where they could go and all the finances are laid out there. It's easily clickable.
Yeah.
Enter your info. You know, for, like I said, podcasters, for YouTube artists, any of those things. You know, to me, the style of your art is, if you get the right...
It fits in. Yeah,
It fits in very well. And... You know, I definitely think, at the very least, have a look to Fiverr, because, you know, then it's a matter of just sharing your link to your page, because I think right now you're in that stage where, you know, like I said, I recognize it in you. You're in this place where you're trying to figure out how to capitalize. You're prolific. Your art is excellent. It's hilarious. And see, that's the other thing, too, is anybody can learn how to use the software that you use to make these things. Being funny is not something, some people will never be funny. Ed.
I sometimes catch people do, like, there was a guy that messaged me and asked me what I used, and I always tell them what I used and stuff like that, because I don't, more artists, it doesn't bother me, because for me, they're not going to be doing exactly what I'm doing, you know, I'm my own person. But he started trying to do similar things, and it just hasn't went anywhere, because it wasn't, the stuff that he was putting up wasn't funny, it was just there to be there and be like, oh, look, I've just done another post about this person.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just feel like that takes something away from the art.
Well, what shines through about you is you are a genuine fan of the people that you are making art, you know.
100%, yeah.
That shines through. And I think as long as you're doing that, you know, that's going to be your best bet. But I really hope that you figure out what the next step is, because I'm excited to see it. I think that 4 months worth of growth is such a short amount of time to have gotten your page to what it is. And I mean, just imagine what it's going to look like a year from now. You know what I mean? So
fingers crossed.
Yeah, for sure. Well, just keep pumping out the work.
Same with your podcast, man. I've been listening every time, and like, just the way you are, your personality just puts you at ease when you listen to you. So it doesn't matter what you're talking about, what sort of subject you're on, you're kind of in that like jovial mood when you listen to you. Like when I listen to you, I'm kind of like, it's like kind of in a fun mood from listening to you. So like, obviously when you have more people on and stuff like that, there's going to be more content out there for people to have. And I think more people should listen.
Well, thank you very much. There's stuff's coming. I'm trying to hustle, trying to grind, and trying to just, you know, do it the right way. Not get 300K Instagram followers in 3 easy steps. You know what I mean? So, hopefully I pick the right path and it works out. Just trying to be genuine and trying to have actual conversations. But thank you so much, Nathan, for doing this. It was a lot of fun. And
thanks for having me on.
No, not a problem. I appreciate it very much. So, if people want to find you, where are they finding you, brother?
At Drawn From The Mind on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. I think that's it. I've got a Society 6 page, which is at Drawn From The Mind as well, and a Teespring page as well. But all the links are in my Instagram, really. You might find me online as 22twos, and that's about it.
All right, brother. Well, it's been a blast, and like I said, I love your work, and it's impressive what you're doing.
Cheers,
and it's impressive that you're doing it with what you've got going on. So thank you very much, and I'd love to do this again in the future.
Yeah, definitely, man, definitely.
All right, brother, you have a good night. It's late over there, right?
Yeah, it's 11:30 now.
Holy shit!
I'll be doing a bit of art before bed. So.
All right, brother. Well, you have a good one, and I'll talk to you.
Okay. All right. Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye. Wow. That was great. What an awesome dude. Nathan Baird. Nathan Christie Baird? That was awesome. Drawn for the Mind at Instagram, at Twitter. What a good dude. I was cool to talk to somebody from the UK, too. Forgot to even mention that. Oh, dude, isn't it cool? You got an accent. all right, guys. So that's a wrap for episode 16, 15. Jesus Christ. I don't know anymore. If that was 11, that was 12, that was 13, that was 14, 15. Yeah, this is number 16. Wow, look at us. Thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, David Corbo. This is Where I Belong. And we got a couple of good ones coming up this week. I've got my buddy Jay from Lionheart MMA, who I'll be talking to on Saturday. He is currently doing the ketogenic diet. He's a mixed martial artist with a record of 2-0. He's a good buddy of mine. He's full of good stories. He's awesome to talk to, and I can't wait for that one. And then after that, we've got a couple more to set up. I don't want to say anything in case it falls through, but we've got a couple more podcasts that I'm working on setting up right now. So that'd be it. If you're listening to this on iTunes, on Spotify, wherever you're listening to this, give me some sort of rating, even if it's a one. If you think it's a one star, give me a one star. Tell me why you think so. I probably won't change anything, but, you know, feedback's cool. Subscribe to something. I don't know what I'm on. I'm the worst ever. Who the fuck knows? But listen, if you like listening to it, do something about it. Other than that, I'll catch you next time. Love you. Bye-bye. Mwah!